I need to start off by telling you that before we go any further, there's something I need you to know. I know. Those are the words you don't want to hear on a first date. Or when you've entered an elevator and the elevator doors close because you don't know what they're going to say next. But seriously, before I use any more of your time, you might decide you want to change channels. And that is because I have a completely unique way of looking at things. Everyone says they have a unique way, and every individual is a complete and unique individual. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying that sometimes the way I describe things is, I guess you kind of have to think about it for a second for it to really make sense. So, with that being said, okay, some people just call it weird. But have you ever had those moments like the Truman Show, that Jim Carrey movie? I think it was 1998. I don't remember what year it was. It was later anyway, a while ago. The Truman Show, where like his whole entire life he was on camera, like everybody was watching him. And do you ever feel like your life is like that? Like you're just like everything you do, like you're someone somewhere is watching you, whether they're making a movie of your life and they're watching it. I used to think that that's what heaven, well, not heaven was, but like after you die for judgment day or whatever, that you go up to heaven and God is there and Jesus is there and Mary and whoever, apostles and everybody were there. And maybe even the whole world was there. And then your entire life flashed on this screen. And because heaven, you know, time is eternal, they could watch everyone's life and be entertained for a long, long, long time, I guess. You'd need a big bowl of popcorn for that movie, right? Anyway, and a tall glass. But so that they would watch your entire movie, and then everybody, or maybe just the judge or the jury or whatever, would decide at that point if they, and they would be looking at it from your perspective, right? So they would judge whether or not you were going to heaven or hell, or, you know, what was going to become of you. That's what I used to think. And that it was this, I don't know, kind of like a, not a game show, but you know what I mean? Just kind of a weird, just think about that for a second. Because in a story like that, the players would be very similar, if that was about your life, right? To Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds movie that just came out not too long ago, Free Guy, if you haven't seen it. Just the nuts and bolts of it. It's about a video game and a player on the video game interacting with real life people. And one of the players somehow interacts as a genuine player instead of RPG. And, or not an RPG, sorry about that. But one of the characters. Oh my gosh, I don't remember what they're called. Fake characters, I'll just call them, because I'm an old person and I can do that and get away with it. Anyway. And NPG. Anyway, the point is that all the other players that were not real people would be computer generated and they'd just do the same things every day, right? Okay, well, yesterday I was in my car and I was driving along and I got behind this car and I recognized it. I recognized that I'd been behind this car before. It was actually a little a little SUV. I recognized that I had gotten behind it before, and it was in the fast lane. And usually I drive in the faster lane anyway, because I kind of drive a little bit more assertively. Not aggressively. I drive assertively. And at any rate, this particular day, yesterday, I was going to turn left anyway. So I needed to be in the left lane so I could turn left. And as I was popping along, you know, there's two lanes going in my direction. And this vehicle that I hadn't yet recognized as one that I'd seen before. But just as I was coming up to it, or beside it, she pops right over between me and the car in front of me. She squeezes right, just right there between us. I'm cruising, she's poking, and she just squeezes right between us. You know, I'm human. I can understand sometimes people have things going on in their heads and they don't think before they change lanes or whatever, you know, whatever the reason. I'm okay, you know. It would be nice if they realized that someone was in that lane that they were changing into before they, you know, bumped into the side of me or whatever. But here's the part that kind of hurt. I'm not sure if it hurt my ego or hurt the fact that I was trying to get home in a particular time. Or maybe it just pissed me off. Maybe that's what it is. And I wasn't getting my way. Maybe I was having a baby temper fit. But the point is that the car in front of her was gone. Not like gone, like it turned off of the road. Like gone, like fading into the distance into the sunset. Meanwhile, the lady that had just changed in front of me was going at the same speed as the dump truck pulling a pup behind it in the lane to her right. The one that she was just assumptively going around when she got in front of me. Now she's going the same speed as him. That really irked me. I'm sure you guys have been in this position before. You're in the fast lane for a reason. Someone gets in front of you going slower, and they get behind someone else that's going the same speed as you, and that person's gone. And then the person that they're passing, they're doing a pokey race. That's what I call a pokey race, where they're going the exact same speed, holding up two lanes of traffic. And this is the part that really, 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 really upset me, was instead of looking ahead of her, on the road ahead of her, she kept looking at me in her rearview mirror. I could see her looking at me in her rearview mirror. And I'm thinking, in fact, okay. I was screaming. I was screaming at her. I'm like, why aren't you looking at the road in front of you? Why in the hell are you looking behind you? Why are you looking behind you? And that's when it dawned on me. I've been behind this woman before, in the exact same place. Maybe that's why she was staring at me, you might think. Like it's a deja vu thing, right? Like, oh, this person's been behind me before. And impatient and irritable. But no, because the first time this happened, I didn't yet know. And this time, in fact, I didn't even know until after it started happening again. But this is an ongoing thing. And that's when I started thinking, oh my gosh, this probably isn't even a real person. This is probably a plant, like on Free Guy or The Truman Show. And she's not even a real person. She just sits in her car off to the side of the road somewhere. And when she sees me coming, she hurries and zips off in front of me and then slows down just to piss me off. And the whole world is watching me on this big old movie screen. The whole world is watching me get pissed off to see how well I handle it. That's what's happening in my life. But now, I no longer believe in God or Jesus or any of that. But that's beside the point. The point is, okay, there is no point. There's no point. There is a point. There is a point. The point is, yeah, this is what it is. The point is, why, when people should be looking at what's going on in front of them, what's coming, what life events are coming toward them that they need to be prepared for. But instead of looking ahead so they can be prepared to turn the wheel or honk the horn or hit the brakes, they're busy looking in the rearview mirror to see what's behind them, to see what they just did, to see what somebody behind them or in their past thought about them or said about them or is doing about them or is gossiping about them. Who cares? Who gives a shit? That's the past. It's gone. Look ahead of you. Be prepared for the future. That's what counts. So, in that, what I would like to talk to you about today is hypnosis. And as I said, I do have a different way of looking at things. Sometimes it's entertaining. Sometimes it's mind-boggling. And other times it may be worrisome. But I guarantee one thing, it's always different. So I'm going to take a really short break here in a minute. But before I go, I want to give kind of a heads up as to what we're going to be talking about, because this is my first podcast that I'm giving so far with Waking Lions Hypnosis. And we're going to be talking about what your subconscious is. As far as I can tell with Freud, he didn't think there was a subconscious. He thought that there was an unconscious, a conscious, and a praxis. What is it called? I can't remember what it is. I'll tell you in a moment. But first, we're going to stop off for a second. Oh, preconscious. Well, we'll talk about it in a second. We're going to break for a commercial. Okay, so we're back. And I was talking about the RPGs, which it's not the RPG. That's a role-playing game. And I played my first RPG when I was in fourth grade, and it was D&D, which is Dungeons & Dragons, and that was a riot. But that's not what I was talking about this time. I was talking about an NPC that rhymes with RPG, but NPC is a non-playable character, and those are the ones that are computer-generated, or not computer-generated, but they don't have people working them. Well, they're kind of computer generated, but somebody made them to be in the computer. Anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we're talking about hypnosis. And it does go along with non-playing characters and being able to cope with things. Hypnosis can help you learn to cope with things. And it can help you center yourself and be in control of yourself And even though I might sound like I'm out of control sometimes, that's just my quirky personality. And you'll learn about me a little bit more as we go along. But most people find it entertaining. Okay, so what I wanted to talk about, though, was hypnosis. And so when we're talking about hypnosis, there are some things that... Okay, this is really gonna just blow you away. Yes, I'm a nonconformist. I disagree with Freud, the genius man of all times, the brilliant, you know, Pavlov's dog, whatever, that studied weird things. And all about sex. Like, everything he ever studied seems like it always centered around sex, whether he had mommy issues or something. I don't even want to talk about that. So we're moving forward with Freud, though, and what his opinion of the conscious, subconscious, and what his thinking is. So what he thinks is that we have a conscious and an unconscious, and he thinks that we have a preconscious. So what he thinks the preconscious is, or not thinks because he's dead, he doesn't think anymore. Silly. Okay, what he thought, in his opinion, was the preconscious was anything that could be brought into the conscious mind. So, before, which is the preface pre, before it was brought into your mind, it was preconscious. I don't even know why we would need to know what that term is, but that was his term. And then the conscious mind, mind you, in his opinion, contains all the thoughts, memories, feelings, and wishes that we have at any given moment, that contributes to our mental processing and that we think about rationally. And we think about it easily and it can be brought into awareness right away. And then what he thinks, notice the emphasis on he, because this is where I really disagree with him, is the unconscious mind. He thinks it's the reservoir of feelings, thoughts, urges, and memories that are outside of our conscious awareness. So he thinks that it's all the things that are unacceptable or unpleasant. So feelings of pain, anxiety, conflict, all the things that we don't want to have consciously or be aware of are belonging to our unconscious mind. Does that make sense to you? Because it doesn't make a swish of poop sense to me. Okay, here's what I think. I do think there are three levels of our minds. I don't think that preconscious is anything we even need to be concerned with. Because if we don't even know about it, why would we even think about it? We don't know about it. So why bother? Okay. Okay, the other thing is, I think that our conscious mind is something that we do use rationally. So in that regard, I agree with him. I think that our conscious mind is what we use to make decisions. We think about it and we say to ourselves, oh, okay, well, let me think about that. In doing so, we decide if it's a good idea, a bad idea. Is there a faster way? Is there a better way? So we consciously put thought into something to make a, finger quotes in the air, decision. And that's what our conscious mind is, in my viewpoint. Okay. The unconscious mind, again, in my viewpoint, and I'm sure there's going to be doctors all over the world that disagree with me, but this is my viewpoint, and I really, honest to God, think it makes sense. The unconscious mind is something that we're not aware of happening. I mean, we might be aware of it, but we don't have to consciously think about it. Things like breathing. You know, you don't have to sit there and think all day, oh my goodness, I better breathe in. Ooh, time to breathe out. Inhale, exhale. We don't do that. It just happens. So that's an unconscious thing, right? That's how I look at it. Our heart beating, we don't have to think about it. It happens. Eyes blinking, same thing. Blood pumping, same thing. These are unconscious things. Our body just does it. Our mind does it. Our body does it. And if our brain was not working, this is the argument for those people that think that blood pumping and all that is not inhibited or activated by our brain working, is that if our brain was not working, those things wouldn't work either. So that's my argument for it being unconscious. Food digesting, all of that, all those things are unconscious. Oh, you're saying, MJ, but what about the things that we just do without thinking? What are those things called? Well, those, my friend, are called subconscious. And the reason I refer to them as subconscious is because at one time we were conscious. At one time we decided, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, we're going to choose this one. We're going to choose that one. But what happens over time after making that decision so many times, it becomes an instinct or a habit. And while it still would be a decision, we've already sort of decided it. And so subconsciously, it's already been decided. You see what I'm saying with that? So if somebody wants to bring up their point of view on that and say something different, that's great. Great by me. I appreciate a good, you know, discussion as long as both sides are heard and I'll listen to you and we can talk about it and even have maybe a friendly debate if you want to do that. As long as you're not just relying on someone else's words to back up what you're saying. And there's actually some substance to it. Because I just gave you mine. But in talking about hypnosis, the reason I wanted to bring those points up is because the way hypnosis works is hypnosis actually talks to the person who's obviously conscious and discusses with them what's going on. What is it that you're unhappy with that you want to change? Obviously, there's something, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't have been there. They didn't come just to sell me Girl Scout cookies. Maybe they did. Anyone selling Girl Scout cookies? Thin Mints. That does the deal for me. Okay, but okie dokie. Well, that was a huge, huge Freudian slip in talking about Girl Scout cookies, because now I've given away my weakness, having talked about weight loss. Yes, I hypnotized myself and I am losing weight. As a matter of fact, all of my focuses that I utilized hypnosis for myself are things that I have successfully accomplished on my own. I quit smoking by myself. I quit biting my nails by myself. My confidence I've worked on by myself. What was the other one? Oh, weight loss. I'm doing by myself. And I had a little burp in that with the whole COVID thing, but I think COVID has made everybody burp in their life at one point or another. Some burps are a little louder, deeper, and stinkier than others. But I hope that the majority of us, I wish that all of us got through it. But thank goodness for the ones of us that do, right? Nevertheless, moving forward, I did want to talk about the hypnosis of the different kinds. Because there's the entertainment type of hypnosis where people on a stage are hypnotized by the hypnotist. And that hypnotist has pretty much a one-way conversation. You know, he's just kind of telling the people what to do. He may gather little bits of information from them, you know, their names or things like that. But he mostly just tells them, you know, what they're going to do. And it's kind of a superficial, well, I don't want to say superficial. It's just not really, really deep hypnosis. But a really good hypnotist can get people to go under pretty darn deep. So when you see people slumped over on the stage, that's real. Okay, that's the first kind of hypnosis. There is a hypnotherapy, which is a deeper hypnosis. And hypnotherapists and hypnotists are the same thing. I prefer to go by hypnotist. I don't even want to arouse people that are counselors and therapists. They seem to like to argue about whether hypnotherapists are real or not. The fact of the matter is, there are therapeutic degrees, there are counselor degrees, there are no hypnotherapy degrees. There are only hypnotherapy certifications, which I do have. But again, I only use my title of a hypnotist. And with that, you can move over into deeper things, psychological trauma that, and the hypnotherapist, a lot of times, if they are not counselors providing hypnotherapy, a lot of times, and I've seen this quite often, they'll pair up. I have seen many hypnotherapists working side by side with therapists, and they work as a team in helping clients. And that is amazing to see, I have to tell you. So if you have the opportunity to work with a team like that, it's awesome. If you have deep-seated or deep-rooted issues you need to work through. Again, I only work on things, as I said, like smoking, weight loss, nail biting, confidence. Oh, and the other one. Oh my gosh, anxiety, which can also be in turn referred to as like fears or phobias, but I like to just focus on it as an anxiety because anxiety is everywhere, man. Everyone's anxious at one time or another. The problem is that some people are anxious all the time. And some people that are anxious all the time are really anxious to the point beyond fear, to the point of intense phobia. And those are the kinds of people that I like to help. As long as it's not, again, going back to things that have happened in their childhood. And the only reason that I don't, even though I could if I wanted to, delve into those is because I don't want to embark on someone's personal private life if I'm just focusing on the other things that are more simplistic, you know, like smoking and nail biting and losing weight and things like that. Because those people need to be happy too. And it seems like there's a lot of people that need help in those areas. And so that's where I'm focused at. But the reason I brought this all up is because I wanted to let you know that no matter the type of hypnosis, because I've already talked about the discussion, right? The psychological and conscious discussion that the hypnotist has with the client in determining and asking questions. It's actually, just so you have a heads up about it, I don't think that the hypnotist is wasting your time, because that's definitely not the intent. They just want to get, or I just want to get, whoever's talking to you just wants to make sure and get clarity on exactly what's going on with you, what you think is causing it, so that we can kind of unravel the pieces and figure it out, and then kind of wind them back together, kind of like a what do they call it? A wubby, you know, those old woven blankets that little kids have, and they drag it around in the dirt and it gets all unraveled and dirty and gross, and they refuse to give it up. Well, those kind of get raggedy, right? And so in layman terms, as far as, you know, as an example, a hypnotist would kind of come in and kind of wash the blanket and then just weave those pieces back together again for you. But we would need to look at the yarn, you know, to find out what kind it is and what kind of stitching and all of that. That was a bad example. Sorry for that. Came off the cuff. It came off the end of my sleeve, up my sleeve, whatever. Yeah, I have sleeves. Okay, moving on. So all hypnosis, no matter who it's from, is self-hypnosis. And you're saying to yourself, oh my gosh, MJ, what are you talking about? Those people on stage, they're not hypnotizing themselves. They are, really. And here's how it works. Ooh, I hope the hypnotists get mad at me for telling you this. Okay, if they do, I should put you under a hypnotic spell right now that you forget the name of the person that told you. No, I'm just kidding. You have to admit that was kind of fun. Okay. No, when a hypnotist, the entertainment kind, right, enters a room, you'll notice on the stage as he'll walk back and forth as he's talking. Okay. He'll walk back and forth as he's talking. He'll be moving his hands a lot as he's talking. And his eyes will be looking directly at the audience. And not only would they be looking at the audience, they'll be moving back and forth, cruising over the surface of the audience, watching for reactions. They can tell, after years of experience especially, from the reactions of the people, the ones that are more likely to be hypnotized. And those are the ones that they'll bring up on the stage. For example, this is just an example. When they ask for, you know, people to volunteer, if a person has their elbow bent and their hand is like by their ear and it's just kind of bent, and it's just a little bit up there, that person's not going to be as emphatic, that person's not going to be as excited, that person's not going to be as willing to do the suggestions that the hypnotist gives. On the other hand, you got little Johnny Willis on the front row, half standing out of his chair with his arms stretched so high that his shirt is lifted and his belly button sticking out. That kid's going to be an awesome freaking participant. Awesome. Grab that kid now. He's gold. Okay, so that's one of the things that the hypnotist looks for. So it's not, he just doesn't pick random people. He picks people he knows is going to be workable. Okay. So there's just little nuancey things that you kind of need to know about this. And it's a pretty interesting thing to think about. It's kind of fun. But as these people are working with different types of things and different varieties of hypnosis and different ways of helping people, it really is amazing. But all of them are self-hypnosis, because if a person, like the guy with his arm only half raised, if a person is not willing to fully listen and engage themselves 100%, they're not going to do as well. And it's because it's what they tell themselves after the hypnotist speaks to them. It's what that person tells themselves that determines the depth of their own hypnosis. Okay, so what we've talked about then is the way that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And you're probably asking, how does that work? Even though I'm giving the hypnotist actual words, how's that working? Well, here's how it is. When you are conscious, that's when you're giving the hypnotist words and your interpretation of those words, as I spoke about. Well, then the hypnotist takes those words, puts you into a hypnotic state, a somnambulistic state, and feeds those words back to your subconscious so that you can hear them directly. So it's kind of skipping the middleman. The way I tend to address this in a way that people who aren't very familiar with hypnotism, there's a couple different ways. And as I said, I used to be a screenwriter. I still kind of am a screenwriter, but I'll tend to use descriptions of movies to kind of put it in different terms so people can understand it better, or in television productions. And the way hypnotism works is directly. So if you were one of the people who was very fortunate to see Keanu Reeves starring as Neo in The Matrix, in the very first movie, do you remember when he very first found out the red and blue pill, all of that kind of stuff, right? We've seen, oh my gosh, all kinds of stuff about that and parodies and stuff. But when he chose to know the real things, he had to prepare for what he was going to know. And to do that, he had to learn all of those skills, all the fighting techniques, all of the different things that would take years and years and years of studying to learn if he learned them consciously. But he didn't. They put little electrodes on his head, and the information went directly to his subconscious. And he learned it all in the snap of his fingers. Or my fingers. Well, yeah, my fingers can snap too. Okay, so in the snap of someone's fingers is how quick he learned it, because he wasn't having to stop and sift through everything, right? Hypnosis works like that. Here's the other way I like to explain it too. If you've seen The Dog Whisperer with Cesar Millan, okay, you have the dog owner, who's usually a nice person. You know, they're a nice person. They have a nice dog. The dog's attractive. The person has money. I mean, there's no reason this relationship shouldn't work out. but for some reason, they're unable to communicate. It's the same situation. You know, you have your client and the activity or the behavior, I should say, the behavior that they want, but they don't know how to get it. Just as Cesar Millan has to help this person communicate with their pet, the client needs to communicate with the behavior. And so the dog whisperer goes in, talks with the owner, as the hypnotist would talk with the client, finds out what the owner wants, as I would with my client. What is it that you want? What do you want to do? What do you want your puppy to do for you? Right? Kind of a thing. Okay, so the dog whisperer finds out, what do you want your puppy to do? And then he leaves the person aside, puts him under hypnosis, right? Puts him aside for a minute. Takes the dog, or the subconscious, if you will, off to the side, plays around with the dog, teaching the dog as the hypnotist teaches your subconscious. And then when he's taught the dog all he needs to teach it, and the hypnotist has taught your subconscious all it needs to teach it, brings you back together. And at the end, wraps them together before bringing the client back out of a hypnotic state. And I know that sounds like a very complicated way of dealing with it, but basically it's like taking something, separating it into two smaller parts, working with those two parts individually, and then bringing them back together to make it work. Sounds kind of funky, huh? Maybe funky's not the cool word anymore. I don't know any cool words. I'm not cool. But with that being said, I hope that if nothing else, even if you never, ever, ever, ever listen to me again, and you don't even care to hear my name, MJ Brewer, again, or Waking Lions Hypnosis, and you never plan on going to www.wakinglionshypnosis.com or looking me up on TikTok or anywhere else, Facebook, wherever, even if you don't ever do any of those things, ever, I hope that you've at least learned one thing from this discussion. This one-way discussion. And that is the way that hypnosis works. And the way that ultimately you are determining whether or not you want to be hypnotized. And that it is self-hypnosis because you're using your own words. And all that's being done is the hypnotist is feeding those words back to you. So, no matter what you're doing in your life, there are three important things. You need always, always be brave, be strong, and be true to you. If you can do those three things every day, you're off to a great start. I'll see you later.